All right, hello everyone, and welcome to today's Austrian Wine Time Masterclass with Paul Kiefer of Winery Landhaus Mayer and Mayer M. Fahrplatz. My name is Antoinette Lundeshan from Cork and Fork in Washington, D.C. We are a premium wine store founded by a multi-generational flying winemaker originally from Champagne, France. For those joining us live, we'd love to hear from you. Place your questions in the Q&A and we will get to them time allowing. Since our guest is joining us live all the way from Austria, quite a few hours ahead of us here in the United States, we will move immediately into the presentation. Paul, please feel free to introduce yourself and let's talk about this amazing winery.
Thank you so much. It's already 11 o'clock in Vienna. I had a perfect dinner already, which just started with the asparagus season here in Austria. It's pretty cold at the moment. We just had snow like 10 days ago in Vienna, which is quite unusual. But we love it to have a kind of later spring because normally the last couple of years it was pretty hot. My name is Paul. I'm working with Winery Mayer and Landhaus Mayer since 11 years. We have two kind of brands. First of all, Mayer M. Fahrplatz, which is our most traditional, is with one of the most traditional brands in Vienna. Dated back to 1683. Even Beethoven lived there, 1817. It's a quite interesting story because Beethoven was a kind of different character. So he lived in different places all around this area. And compared to Mozart, Beethoven was more difficult to handle and Mozart was mostly bankrupt. So both characters are moved a lot of times in different flats in within the city limits. So Beethoven lived only 1 year in our building. It was 1817. And he wrote partly the Ninth Symphony during this time. So that's why Mayer M. Fahrplatz is one of the official Beethoven houses here in this area. In general, Vienna is the capital of Austria. There are 2 million citizens, or the population of Vienna is 2 million. And it's actually the biggest growing capital, wine capital in the world. So we more or less growing around 700 hectares within the city limits, which means 2.5 million liters of wine. And there are still 200 winemakers producing wine within the city limits. So it's quite unusual. So there are two facts why there is such a big amount of wine or wine areas within the city limits. First of all, the Heurigen tradition. So we have culture-wise kind of music. We have the coffee culture. But on the other side, we have wine culture. So if you visit Vienna, you should definitely see for 1 or 2 days the wine sites of Vienna. So from the city center, you drive only 15 minutes and you are already in the middle of the vineyards overlooking the whole city. So it's actually a fantastic view. And the Heurigen culture was very important in the past on one side, but on the other side, it was kind of I would say ambivalent situation because the Heurigen, the wine taverns, was the main fact why there are still vineyards within the city limits. On the other side, the quality level was not that high, I would say in the 80s and early 90s, because you can imagine when you sell 100% of your production to your own restaurant and there's no need to sell any wines to export countries, to any other restaurants in Austria, the quality standard and the quality level was not that good. So the Heurigen owners were quite relaxed because they sold almost 100% of the total production in their own restaurant. So that's the main point why we had kind of a low quality level like in the 80s in Vienna, when other regions like the Wachau Valley, Kamptal, Kremstal had already outstanding quality level. On the other side, the Heurigen was like the main fact why there are so many hectares within the city limits of Vienna, because it was the main wine which was sold in this restaurant. And it's still by law, you can only sell the own produced wines in your Heuriger. So for us, it's not allowed to buy any fruit, to purchase any fruit from someone else when we sell these wines in our own restaurants, in our own Heurigen. And this dates back actually to Joseph II, the emperor, who decided to give the winemakers another income beside of wine production, also the kind of hospitality business. And we still have this kind of law. And when you go to, or when you visit a Viennese Austrian local Heurigen, you definitely get only 100% estate grown wines, which is something unique. But on the other side, you have to take care your wine list is more or less over the whole year. On your focus, because if you're running out of wines and you have only your own production, people maybe get bored about your wine list. So that's a fact why we produce almost 17 to 20 different wines here in our own place. On the other side, the Heurigen culture was so important for us in terms of field blends, which is a very interesting wine in Austria, or especially in Vienna, to mix different grapes in one field and to harvest them together, co-ferment them. And that's why we still have a lot of field blends here in Vienna. It's a quite kind of a rare product. And I think you do have some field blends in the US, even from us. Maybe we start with our first wine. Now we step into Grüner Veltliner from Landersmeyer. It's our second brand, because the wine production is so limited within the city limits of Vienna. We source also grapes outside of the city, which is like 10 driving minutes on the other side of the Danube River, because Vienna is directly near the Danube. And when we cross the border, or when we cross the Danube, we're entering already Lower Austria, Niederösterreich. And there is a lot of Grüner Veltliner, which is Austria's signature grape, of course, because I would say Grüner Veltliner is one of the most food-friendly grape varieties in the world. When you harvest it earlier, you get like a kind of fresh, crisp green apple, citrus, lemon driven wine. When you harvest it quite late, I would say middle of October, the wines is getting really rich. The color is getting more yellow and into pear, sometimes even exotic fruit characters. And if you harvest it quite late, something with botrytis, it moves sometimes into a kind of a Riesling character, which is quite interesting. But it will never lose the spiciness and the pepper character, which is very important for Grüner Veltliner, even if you harvest it quite late. So you can decide when you buy, would say, Grüner Veltliner, what we taste today, between 12 and 12.5 alcohol. They are more on the fresher side, very crisp, perfect with seafood, oysters, and this kind of stuff. And when you go for like Grüner Veltliner 13.5, they are darker in color, they are rich, they are very creamy, completely different to these wines we're tasting today. And they're going more for like kind of Asian dishes with kind of richness and spicy food. And that's why the grape variety is so interesting and so I would say there's such a huge variation of this grape, and it depend. You can produce in each area of Austria these types. It mostly depends how long how late you harvest the grapes and how long you keep them in a barrel and on the lees. We taste 2019 Grüner Veliner Tausmeier. There's a sheep on the bottle because there are some sheep farms around Vienna, and it's the appellation is Lower Austria, and we produce them in our cellar. So, but we get the grapes outside of the city limits. It's a Grüner Veliner, very very fresh, very crisp, a lot of spiciness, and that's for me the perfect summer Grüner Veliner, easy drinking on the terrace with barbecue, or if you have a pool or a beach, that's perfect. And also and very nice with all kinds of seafood, with oysters or with crab. So this is the most typical food along with this wine. The second wine is Riesling, and that's very important to tell you about Riesling in Austria. Riesling is, compared to the German style, very, very dry in Austria. We love crisp Rieslings. We love dry Rieslings. And even if a Riesling with like 5 or 6 grams sugar, Austrians are not really familiar with this wine. So that's why we are a cool climate area in Austria. And that's why we love to produce this fresh, crisp Riesling type. This Riesling you're going to taste today is 2018. It was a quite hot vintage compared to the Grüner Veliner. 2019 was a phenomenal vintage, not too hot, not too cold. Riesling actually is the last grape in Austria we harvest, so it's more or less middle of October or almost end of October, depending on the ripeness. And the Riesling in Austria is always bone dry, so I would say 2 to 3 grams sugar, not more. And there's a lot of apricot and peach flavors going on. You have again this nice citrus flavor and a long, vibrant acidity, which is very important. And we actually love acidity in Austria, and that's why we match this with most kinds of fishes, mostly sweet water fish, because they're more elegant, like trout and like these type of fishes, and they're perfect with Austrian Rieslings. Pending on the vintage, like 2018 starts already a little bit to getting a little bit of petrol flavors. We know this even from other areas where Riesling is grown, like I would say like in Australia sometimes. The petrol starts a little bit earlier. It's definitely linked into the hotter climate. Normally, in an average vintage, the petrol flavors will not start before 5, 6, 7, 8 years of when you mature the Rieslings. When you have such a hot year like 2018, it might be a little bit earlier. The fact of hotter climate is not a big deal at the moment in Austria. It's definitely we have to think about, but it's more of sometimes we have really hot years and then maybe 2 or 3 really cold years. So it's not, we can't see it's a very consistent change. I would say more it's hotter and colder in 1 year. So 2018 definitely hotter year, 2019 very, very good year, very well balanced in acidity, in freshness, and not too hot, definitely not What we try in the, when we're thinking about these climate changes, maybe in the future we need irrigation, but not at the moment, and we're more or less fine only if the grapes are grown on sand. Then we need maybe irrigation in the future. And what we try is we plant more and more on the north side, like not south-faced. And then we can bring more acidity and more freshness into the wines. But in general, I would say if we get problems with the climate change in Austria, many, many other wine regions in the world are getting by far too hot, and maybe the UK is then the perfect area for fantastic white wines and champagne, of course, to do already. But we are still definitely a cool climate area, even if the climate change is happening. Like in Vienna, it's pretty interesting. When I drive from the city center up to the hills, we're talking about 350 to 400 meters of sea level. There's a drop of almost 4 or 5 degrees in like 10 minutes. So the city itself will keep the temperature pretty long, and outside of the city, or within the city limits, sorry, but outside of the center, we have a much cooler climate. We get a lot of cool breeze from the Viennese forest, from the wood there. And we get of course, a cool breeze from the Danube River. On the other side, we are pretty happy because when we have the late frosts, which are almost during the last 10 years, every second or every third year, like I told you before, we had 10 days ago, a lot of snow in the city. The city is always protecting a little bit the climate here in the area. And we have almost 2 to 3 degrees of warmer temperature than outside of the city limits. So we are not in the case of these kind of late frosts outside of the city. The third wine, we still stay with Landesmeyer. The third wine is already 2020, which was a cooler vintage. So I would say we taste three different vintages. It was pretty interesting. 18 very warm, very hot. 19 very well balanced, not too hot, not too cold, and 2020 very cold. So we had all like the harvest was almost 2 weeks later than normal, compared to 2018 was 3 weeks later than normal. 2018 we started last week of August. 2020 we started middle of September. So it's unbelievable, 3 weeks in between. And the rosé is a kind of interesting wine. It's a very refreshing rosé. We use mostly Zweigelt. A lot of strawberry and raspberry flavors. Again, this acidity compared to the French rosé, we have more acidity in Austria. They are more crisp. Sometimes they have more, a little bit of louder fruit character. And it's also a wine which is perfect with kind of spring, summer, barbecue on the terrace. We have a very big wine or rosé trend since around 3 or 4 years in Austria. I would say it will end of September, end of October to drink rosé, but in the next 4 or 5 months, it's really like kind of a very popular type of wine we love to enjoy now. And I would say rosé is even perfect with kind of richer fish, kind of salmon, grilled salmon, grilled tuna. That's the type of fish and seafood I would love to enjoy with. Even with chicken, that's perfect. But the interesting story is the next wine, Pinot Noir, is also very good with kind of tuna. When you grill tuna, the Pinot is perfect with the grilled flavors of tuna. And now we step into Vienna. Vienna, there are 700 hectares of wine within the city limits. We own around 70 hectares, like 10% of this of the size of Vienna. It sounds a lot, but the point is we run this very famous wine tavern, the Heuriger, and we have 400 seats. They're almost fully booked every day. And we have another Buschenschank. So Heuriger and Buschenschank almost the same, but Heuriger, you can serve warm food. And Buschenschank, you can only serve cold food by law. It's not allowed to serve warm food. And the Buschenschank is in the middle of the vineyards, overlooking the whole city, and it's fantastic. We only open it when the weather conditions are fine, because it's open air. And for both venues, we need almost 20% of all our own produced wines. And that's why I told you before, they have to be estate grown. And that's why we need a proper amount of vineyards. Otherwise, we're running out during the year. And the wine list is getting smaller and smaller. So it's pretty interesting. When you visit our Heuriger, I would say in October, when the new harvest starts, the wine list is almost half than what we are doing now. So it's kind of it's a huge focus on our products, but end of the day, we have to take care. We have enough wine, and we have enough different products. So we produce sparkling wines. We have white wines. We have red wines. We have sweet wines. So dessert wines. So it's a kind of a big range, and that's why I have to produce a lot of different wines. The climate in Vienna, or the soil, is very chalky. So we have a lot of limestone, and the interesting part is, of course, Austria, there's no sea at all in Austria, but 3 million years ago, Austria was covered by the sea, and there's a lot of limestone in Vienna. So the hills of Vienna are all a kind of reefs. And we have, when we plant new vineyards, we find almost a huge oyster shells like this, fossils in the soil. And it's pretty interesting, because there is no sea at all. So that's the point why we can grow really mineralic, kind of almost Burgundy styled Pinots in Vienna. And it's interesting because it's not a new idea to grow wine within the city limits. Actually, the Romans brought the wine to Vienna, and there was the emperor Kaiser Probus, and he was an emperor only for a couple of years because they killed him, actually. And he brought to the Roman area, he planted in different parts of the Roman emperor. He planted the wine areas, and Vienna was a big area for wine during these days. And luckily him, we still have a lot of wine within the city limits. And actually, I call them, it's kind of the central park of Vienna, because, you know, people, every weekend there are thousands of people are walking around with the dogs, hiking with the bicycles, and it's a huge area. And the forests and the wine areas are so close to the city, and they definitely bring a lot of fresh air to the city. That's why we are voted maybe 10 or 12 times in a row as the highest quality living area in the world, because the wine area and the forest is definitely a big part of the air quality and of I would say kind of a natural resort very close to the city center. About the Pinot. The Pinot you taste now is very elegant. You see the color is very bright. And the interesting story is we are more focused in Austria on darker Pinots. And when we picked this Pinot Noir a couple of years ago with our importer, with Amos Walker, they tasted the wine and they were really like kind of impressed and like kind of how it comes you produce this type of Pinot. And the point is, Vienna is definitely more a white wine region, and I told you before, it's more a cool climate area. And when we're talking about climate change, Pinot is definitely a grape who is more focusing or more linked into white wine areas in terms of climate. And that's why Pinot is doing really well. We have the chalk, we have this cool climate, which is sometimes more into white wine, but Pinot is doing really well there. And that's why we love this, I would say, almost very French-driven Pinot. When you go more to the Hungarian border, where the Lake Neusiedler Sea is, maybe you know it more from these rich red wines we produce in Austria. Sometimes Pinots are getting very rich there, completely different character. When you go more into white wine areas, they're getting more a little bit more elegant, high in acidity. And you can really decide if you want to pick like these more traditional, brighter ones, a little bit more fresher, or these a little bit richer, more darker style near the Hungarian border. So it's quite interesting. And there is only like 15 or 1 hour driving in between. So you can see it's Vienna or Austria is a, it's a, in terms of climate, there's a big a difference between these areas. Yeah, and before, I know you have only these four wines, but before I leave you with the wines, you definitely should look for the field blend, which is, I told you before, one of our last, or which is one of the last areas in the world where you will find field blends, where different grapes are planted together, harvested together, and co-fermented. And in the early days, like 200 years ago, almost whole Europe was covered by field blends. But they ripped them off and they planted only single varieties. But Vienna was one of the last regions besides of Portugal, where you find field blends in terms of red, where field blends are still there. So we have a lot of field blends, like 40, 50 years old wines, because this was the most popular wine in our Horrigen. So because of this huge Horrigen culture we still have in Vienna, people love to drink Grüner Veltliner and field blends. And that's the main fact why Vienna is the only region in the world where you will find a proper area of still of field blends. A little bit is in Elsass, Portugal in terms of red, and I tasted already some examples from California. They are sometimes replanted. And that's interesting because you have different fruit characters into one wine and they have to be harvested at the same time, co-fermented. And that's the uniqueness about the field blend. So, so watch out also about the field blends in Washington. 1 second. Yeah, I can't hear you. Okay. Sorry. It's go ahead.
You can hear me?
Yeah, now it's better.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much. That was a whirlwind of information. We would love to hear about the winemaking team. Is it one winemaker making all of these wines? And in addition, also to discuss or just touch on the winemaking regulations within Vienna.
Yeah. So as I told you before, that there are 700 hectares of wine within the city limits. It's almost half of the size of the Wachau Valley. So normally you don't think about wine in Vienna. And that's the fact because 20 years ago, wine was not that popular in the city. But more and more people are proud about, or especially the Viennese are proud about their own wine. And The fact it's more important, you know, like this regional stuff, you know, like sustainable drink wines from your own region without any like, you know, the footprint. I mean, that's maybe the closest you can get. I mean, it's like 2 or 3 kilometers from the vineyards to the restaurant in the city center. And when I started actually 11 years ago, it was not popular to drink really wine in of Vienna in the outside of the city limits. But more and more, our ski resorts, our lake areas, we have, I don't know, 80, 90 different lakes in Austria. And we people really love now to enjoy Viennese wines. And of course, in the city, you know, you can imagine the bowls, the bowl season, the dancing season. People love to drink Viennese wines there, the hotels, mini bars, so catering, restaurant business. So there's almost no restaurant anymore in the city without Viennese wines. And when you say we have 2.5 million liters of wine and we have 2 million people within the city without tourists, actually there's only 1 liter per person. If this would be the case, it's not necessary to sell any liter or any bottle of wine outside of the city limits. But of course, that's not the point. But we love to bring wines to other countries. There are almost Viennese wine in 40 different countries all over the world. So we're pretty proud about it. And I think it's something unique to live in a huge city and to produce the wine. So I work sometimes in the vineyards, and then I go in the city center, going to the disco or having a good dinner. And that's quite unusual, because when you go outside of the city limits and you go to Styria, you go to Burgenland and you go to Bacha, you need minimum an hour or 2 hours to go to the city center. But we are more or less in the city, and that's it's even for us, it's kind of unique to live in the city, because I'm living right in the middle of the city, and I can walk every morning into our winery. Actually, the winery is 5 minutes walking distance from here. So it's that's definitely something really special, and that's why we call it urban winemaking. It's kind of the like in New York, they have this winery in the city center, right? But it's pretty small and it's on the roof. But we definitely have a big area here in the city. Our winery is still family owned. The family is not anymore into the daily business. The owner is 83 years old. So we are a young team of three main people. I'm in charge of sales marketing, but I'm coming actually more from the wine side, from as a sommelier. So I'm doing also sometimes the blending with the cellar master and with the general manager. And we are more or less a team of three people, around 40 years old in age. And then we do have another assistant cellar master. She's actually the niece of the previous owner. And maybe to explain you a little bit the name or the wording. So Meyer am Fabrats. Meyer used to be the owner. He passed away a couple years ago. He was like the pioneer or the kind of doyen of the Viennese wine. And Fabrats means the church square, end of the day. So in the middle of the square is the church, and on the left side is our Heuriger, where the winery used to be, and on the right side we have kind of a fine dining restaurant. So it's definitely worth it to visit this area. So it's it's 50 minutes from the city center, but it feels already like really countryside. And then on the other side, we have this kind of Landhausmeyer brand with the sheep on the label. We founded this 2011 because we have the wine growing area is so limited within the city limits. We were almost sold out every year. And you can imagine if you grow wine within the city limits, it's very, very expensive. Our vineyard workers are living in the most expensive living area because the 19th district, so actually I brought you this t-shirt, so it means Beverly Döbling. Döbling is the name of the 19th district, and it's one of the most wealthiest areas in Vienna because it's so green and it's so close to the vineyards and to the forest. So people love to live there. So only family houses, villas are there. So it's quite difficult to or expensive to grow wine there. And even around 10 years ago, when it started to be popular to own vineyards in the city, many investors, many real estate companies started to try to buy vineyards in Vienna. Because they had like a idea to build a villa in the vineyards, but thanks God we have a very, very strong law, and actually our previous mayor was really into wine. He loved wine, and have you heard maybe in the US about Spritzwein? Spritzwein is like you have half sparkling water and half wine, and you mix it. It's a spritzer. And that's very popular in Austria and especially in Vienna. And the previous mayor always started his every morning with a spritzer already, like at 10 o'clock. So he was definitely a big character into wine, and he was very important. So all the vineyards are 100% safe. And that's very important for us to continue and to keep this region really safe, and I would say to protect it definitely. Yeah, I would say that's more or less like a younger team, and there are different points why the Viennese wine culture had a success during the last 10 years, which was unbelievable or not maybe not possible like 15, 20 years ago. You have this type of unique wines or vineyards within the city limits. Then on the other side, this type of field blend, which is so rare in the world and such a unique wine. And on the other side, our place where Beethoven lived, the wine culture. So these are kind of main facts. And I would say if we're talking about the change where sustainability and all these matters are very, very important, I would say that's the main focus why Viennese people love their own wines. And we're still in a very hard lockdown at the moment. We will open it middle of May, but we just opened last week our takeaway business in the vineyards, and we had like I would say 500-600 people today. I mean, they are sitting in the vineyards, picking a bottle, picking like some cold cut and traditional Viennese food, cold food, and they're enjoying it in the vineyards. But it's definitely something very local, and people we just saw it during the last year during the pandemic. This was maybe very, very important so for people recognized more and more how important the local area, the local nature is for them, because in the past we had the chance to drive everywhere in the country, or we go to the airport and go for vacation. But when you have to stay within your city, you detect your city in a completely different way. And I would say this was a kind of a very sustainable way for us to get new people into this area and to get a new idea for these people how close the vineyards and how close the wine area really is for these citizens. Sorry.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I believe that you have you will be receiving some visitors from Washington, D.C. once we're able to start flying again. Before we say goodnight, do you have any final thoughts to share with the group?
Yeah, I would love to definitely to invite you to Vienna. Normally it's a direct flight from Washington. It's a 10-hour flight. I did it a couple times already. And please definitely let me know when you're in the city. I would love to show you the winery. You can go to the city center, book a hotel there, and a cab brings you in 10 minutes into the vineyards. You definitely should see the opera. You should see the Viennese coffee culture, and you definitely should see the Viennese wine culture. And if you don't have the chance to see all these facts here in or all this culture here in Vienna, maybe you have a chance to taste more of our Viennese wines back in the US. And I'm looking really forward to visit you guys. I'm getting actually my vaccination next week, so I'm looking forward to visit you guys already in full.
Excellent, thank you very much, and also thank you to Daniel Hubbard for facilitating the last two wines in the tasting lineup. We're so delighted to be able to include all four wines in the tasting this evening. So thank you for joining us today. Thanks to all for watching and for your interest in the great wines of Austria. We encourage everyone to visit our website calendar at corkandpork.co to view the Austrian wine events we are hosting with some of the region's greatest producers, such as the one we were so honored to have tonight. So, Paul, thank you for all of your work and your support leading up to the event, and of course, for an amazing presentation. And we wish everyone a lovely, lovely evening, and I'm going to end the meeting for all. So thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.